How's it going?
I'm okay. Go Ravens.
Go Ravens? Yeah. Go Ravens? Go Ravens. Are you going plus three, plus three and a half?
I'm not wagering on it.
Oh, no. Come on. It's never, it's the first game of the NFL season. If there was ever an excuse to be a betting man, that's the excuse.
Yeah, no, here's my – I would never wager against Patrick Mahomes to begin with. Like, that first. And secondly, I find, particularly when I have a rooting interest in a game, because I either love a team, as in my beloved Buffalo Bills, or hate a team, as in the Kansas City Chiefs, I don't need any extra – reason to feel miserable as it's going against me. And so I try to keep the stakes low. I already am emotionally invested in the Chiefs losing, and so I don't also need to be financially invested in the Chiefs losing. So I will not be wagering on this game, but I will be, for this one night and one night only, a Ravens fan. Plus, the Ravens are going to lose enough games in their division that I don't even mind them winning. Like, they're sort of a threat too. But I don't mind them winning, so go Ravens.
Well, the Ravens, last time they met in the regular season, ended up winning the game. So there is that.
Yeah, but Lamar's really good in the regular season.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, listen, if you're going to bet against Patrick Mahomes, just don't do it in the playoffs. That's my new rule with Patrick Mahomes.
Josh has beaten him twice in the regular season.
That's what I'm saying. Like, regular season, you mentioned not betting against Patrick Mahomes. I'm okay with that during the regular season. That has never bothered me. It's just postseason. Don't be dumb enough to bet against him in the postseason.
I just don't.
You just don't.
I just don't want to deal with it. I'm already miserable enough whenever he wins. I don't need to add it. Like, some people say they need to gamble to feel something, to have the juice on the game, you know. That's the feeling I'm trying to avoid.
Okay.
You know, I don't like the tension that comes with that. And so, like, my ideal game, I loved the USC game last weekend. Because I didn't care. You know, I really didn't care. I had no... Did you care who won that game?
Not at all. Didn't care at all.
Didn't care. Just fun, really fun game, and I didn't care at all. It was perfect.
It was kind of like the A&M Notre Dame game I kind of felt the same way about, too.
A little bit the same way. Yeah, same way.
I think there was a lot of games like that last week, right? In college football.
I kind of wanted Notre Dame just because they always lose that game, right? And I thought it was a better storyline if they win. Plus, then you have a third straight, you know, A&M losing a third straight opener. That's kind of fun. So I was a little more invested in that one. But yeah, there was a lot of just good theater last week. Honestly, I think you're right in terms of games that wasn't particularly invested in, but really enjoyed.
All right. Speaking of theater, I don't even know if I want to term it as theater, but four coaches fired. Now an anonymously sourced letter that details all of the allegations the NCAA is going to be looking into. And two allegations that the NCAA was actually not looking into, from my best understanding. They were looking into the academic fraud that Malcolm Dandridge was at the center of last year. But now we have a $30,000 payment to DeAndre, a $60,000 payment to Emmanuel Acott, who didn't actually play a game here. What do you make of all of this? It is hard to feel, any type of positivity, even with, I like the roster they have this year. I think they could be an NCAA tournament team, but looking at what the backdrop of dysfunction under the Penny Hardaway era, it's all coming to a head right now.
No, it's first of all, it's unfortunate. I don't think anyone enjoys it. And as someone who lived through and covered the end of the Larry Finch era. And again, I'm not saying this is absolutely going to go that way, but, you know, I mean, GP wrote a column today about the end of the Penny Hardaway era. And I'm kind of in a position now where I've written about the end of so many eras, both at Memphis basketball and Memphis football and Grizzlies as well. I have never enjoyed writing a should be fired column. In fact, sure. I really don't tend to do that. I can't think of any coach where I really was sort of out ahead of it, saying maybe with Tubby, you know, because he was just so clearly a bad fit. But like even Larry Porter, it was obvious. I mean, they are actually what I wrote was that R.C. Johnson should be fired, because the football program was in that state. So I did write that, but even then, it's not fun. to see this, and you quarter to keep hoping. Well, in fact, I heard Jeffrey earlier talking about how could this work out? Like, how could you escape here? Like, how could this work out okay? And they were spinning a, well, you know what? If they hire, you know, Nolan Smith and Mike Davis. Whatever, like, you could actually upgrade the staff. You have a pretty good team. If you escape the NCAA stuff, all of a sudden, you know, he's escaped. And maybe people feel good about things again. And so I guess there is that scenario. But it does feel like the accumulation of things and the exhaustion that people have. Like, I opened the phones today.
And bold move, by the way, Jeff. Bold move. I applaud you for it.
Typically, when you open the phones, you actually get a sort of a mix. Like, I've had people, like, fierce defenders of Penny and, you know, and then fierce critics. Like, here, the overwhelming response was, I've always been a Penny fan, but I'm exhausted. Yeah. You know? That's what the overwhelming, and so it's just after a while, it beats down on you, and it just is like, okay, enough. It's like, what? Wait a second. We just had the collapse last year that we've had. We've had one tournament win in 6 years. We have the team falling apart, cleaning house at the beginning of the summer, then cleaning a house again in early September, including your lead assistant. And then another NCAA investigation on top of the ongoing NCAA investigation, on top of the completed NCAA investigations that had Penny suspended for 3 games. Like, at some point, the accumulation of it just becomes, too much, I think. And so I think that's where we are. And obviously, like, and I said this on my show this morning, I do think one of the notable things here is, and I'm not, you know, we've said this throughout the day, people have made this point, and I made it this morning, this letter was around last week.
Yep.
And anyone in the media in Memphis locally saw it, and no one published it because it's anonymous allegations, and respectable journalists don't publish anonymous allegations. You can try to verify them and then publish that or whatever else. But, and so what Pat Forty did is he went to the University of Memphis, and lo and behold, if you look at the headline is Memphis acknowledges anonymous letter. Well, that's what made this printable from a journalistic perspective. You're not printing the anonymous letter. You're not printing the allegations. What you're printing is, hey, Memphis acknowledges. They got this letter and they turned it over to the NCAA. Memphis didn't have to do that.
Yep.
You know, Memphis could have said simply, we don't comment on anonymous allegations. And then, I don't know exactly how Pat would have handled that, but I'll tell you how I would have handled that. I would have said, well, it's not enough for us to print the letter. You know, we don't have anything. We have anonymous allegations, and we have no comment about anonymous allegations, or that they even got the anonymous allegations. And so we have nothing. Instead, what they did was, yes, we got this, and we sent it on to the NCAA.
Yeah.
And that's news. That's solid news. And so then you wonder, is it just because they're playing things totally straight, and they're being transparent, and good for them, by the way, if they're
trying to mitigate the issues before they get here?
Or is it because they're sick of it, too?
Yeah.
You know, we could have buried it, but we're after 6 years of this, we're kind of sick of this.
Is it an or? You know? Does it have to be an or? Can it be an and?
Oh, yeah.
I think it's an and.
No, it could be an and, except for I don't know that they're sick of it, too. You know, I don't know that. I mean, there are people who would suggest that they did it because they want Penny Hardaway out. And so this having this letter comes to light, and I can't say that's an and. I think it's an or. I mean, I think it's, did they feel compelled in the interest of transparency to say that to Pat Forty, or did they feel like it because they have the same agenda? Their agenda is to end this thing.
And this is what I said off the top. I think, one, yes, they're trying to mitigate by being up front. That's one part of it. I think, two, like, I think there is a clear statement from this new athletic department led by Ed Scott, they're being upfront and clear with Penny that the conversation is open to find another leader of this program if these things don't stop. I think it's right. An and. I think that it accomplishes two things for them, and I don't disagree with their thought process if those two things are their thought process.
I don't think telling the media mitigates anything. I think being open with the NCAA mitigates
things. Yes, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, they sent it to the NCAA.
Sending it. But you still don't have to say it. You still don't have to tell the media that you did, that you forwarded it. And that doesn't mitigate anything. That's just telling the media, why did you tell the media that? You told the media that? Is it because you're just transparent, or is it because you also wanted to send the message
that's where my second part comes in. You're making it clear. Yeah. Hey, get it right, or we're going to have to think about it. We're going to have to be open to this conversation.
But then the second question is it, okay, we're not going to put up with this anymore, so make sure you fly right, or is it, in fact, we want him gone, and that's why.
Yeah, we've seen that in multiple stops or in multiple places. You usually do fire with cause.
We just saw it at Tennessee. Right.
Yes.
So, all these things are swirling, and no one. It's not fun. I don't think. I don't think any of it's fun. As tough as it is when Rip Shear gets fired, or when Josh Pastner gets forced out, or when Larry, it's a totally different thing when it's Penny Hardaway going through this. And it is very much the only thing that rivals it is when it happened to Larry Finch. And the truth of the matter is, Larry Finch was a lot more successful as a basketball coach than Penny Hardaway. The year before Larry Finch was forced out, he'd gone to the NCAA tournament. They lost to Drexel in the first round and were upset, but that was a terrific team that he had. And then it was before Christmas of the next year, he was already forced out. But it's the same stuff. It's the fan base that has loved you all along and still loves you is kind of like, This is not going to work.
You've asked a few questions, so I'm going to ask one to you. This is my biggest question to monitor heading into the season, the rest of this offseason, whatever. Is he running out of allies, Penny Hardaway? Because that's the question I have very that's at the forefront of my mind after seeing an anonymous letter get sent to the NCAA and then leaked to the media. I mean, that's what I have to start thinking about.
I think there's two things there. One is, I think the letter, anonymous letter, is evidence, not that part isn't that he's running out of allies, that's the part that he's made some enemies, right? And Prathapadhyay did a story today at the Daily Mention where he everyone who's worked for Penny.
Nuts, by the way, that story, just when you look at it.
Well, I mean, some of it, the number originally is 41, but that's, if that's just if you look at the media guide under coaching staff, and it's a little deceptive, and it says this in the story because it includes the team chaplain and all kinds of things, right? So, but then if you just look at assistants and associate head coaches and head of basketball ops, sort of the critical positions, right? There's been 17, which is a lot in. He's been here so far. He's completed 6 years. And so 17's a lot. And by the way, there'll probably be more added now. So 17's a lot. And Penny, very clearly, one of his flaws has been that he doesn't manage people well. And that's true of players. The Amani Bates fiasco, we've seen that, the way he handles his starting rotations, all that. And it's also, I think, true of assistants. And so someone knew, someone was intimately involved enough in the program to know what they put in the letter, and it's obviously turned against Penny. So that is, Penny has made enemies. I think that's true. And then in terms of the allies, I think that's critical too. How many of the people who once supported Penny, and by that I mean the big boosters, how much are they... Are they still on board, or are they sick of it? And I would venture, it's impossible not to be sick of the chaos, right?
Yeah.
when you have, and by the way, like, you can put up with the kind of quote-unquote chaos that Georgia football puts up with now.
When they're winning.
When winning like Georgia football, yes. Right? You know what I mean? Like,
okay, does your production outweigh your problems?
Right. And that's exactly it. And so when you have, you know, this started with, you know, it started with the James Wiseman stuff, you know. Honestly, it started at East High School, you know. Like, back then, Penny said, I never read the real book. And so those championships were stripped. And so you had this going on the entire time he's been here. You had not much in the way of production and an incredible drama. And people just get sick of it. And so that's true of the man on the street. I'd be surprised if it isn't also true of some of the most important boosters. But I don't know that for sure. But it stands to reason that he has fewer allies. It's also true that you can feel it, like he's drawing his circle closer in the media too, right? Like, yep. He doesn't talk to people anymore, right? Now he just talks to a few select handpicked people who he know are, you know, got his back. It's when things are closing in, you know, what happens is you draw in to protect yourself or whatever else, but then it's not a positive cycle, right? It's not a positive cycle. And so it feels like that's what's happening. Again, I think all of us hope that he somehow can look back, you know, from the Sweet 16 this year and say, man, to think where we were in early September and think we are now, this has been the greatest, you know, trip of my life.
Yes.
Like, that would be great. But it is not. It does not seem like a likely scenario.
I want to rewind to yesterday. Rick Stansberry let go. Jamie Rosser, Faraji Phillips, Demetrius Dyson. And I think there's a lot of people that sort of view it as, okay, there was something coming down the pike from the NCAA like we saw today, or from an anonymously sourced letter that's the details allegations, whatever it is. A lot of people saw it and said, okay, they're firing these people to try to mitigate. Maybe these guys know where the bodies are buried. They're trying to mitigate any punishment they get from the NCAA. But also you have people talking about budgetary concerns. They're just way too outstretched with that staff. There's also been the discussion about Ed Scott potentially, and obviously this is a little bit of informed speculation, that maybe there's a little too many yes men on that staff. Like, how did you view the four firings yesterday?
Well, I viewed them the way, at the surface level, I viewed them the way anyone would, as evidence of, you know, chaos.
Yeah, dysfunction.
It's not normal. It is not normal to be firing.
But I guess the question
people,
I have is, do you think is there any one thing that rises to the top? Any one reason that rises to the top to make that type of decision right now?
I think I would say, we don't know the reasons. So yes, the next question is why, and we don't know the why. I happen to, just through conversations, I don't think it's Ed Scott saying you must fire these people. That does not sound like,
well, suggestion, the way, maybe.
And I don't think it was actually, you know, we're going to sacrifice these people to the altar of the NCAA. I don't think it was either of those things. I think it was more Penny being Penny, and maybe encouraged to do, you know, but yeah, I'm not saying it wasn't. I'm sure he's had conversations with Ed Scott. Of course he has, about how you're running your program, et cetera. I think that's certainly true. But I think for any of us to say it was
one
because
thing
of the NCAA, right, or it was because, I honestly think, I have not heard anyone. I've heard lots of theories.
Sure.
I have not heard anyone say with confidence they know this is what happened. Right? I know for a fact that this is why he got rid of.
And hell, I was talking to Jason Munns yesterday, and he said we could have an hour conversation on all of the reasons that probably came to be to equal up to four coaches being let go in September.
There had to be one reason. Like, there was a reason, right? But, like, take Rick Stansberry. Rick Stansberry, if you think about it, he's only been here a year. It feels like 10 years, right? Like, because he's the stability in the storm, right? He was, at least before he was canned. But he'd only been here a year. And then at the end of the year, he had to come out and make a statement that he's coming back, right? And why did he have to do that? Well, for a couple of reasons. One is because everything looked like chaos, and we're like, oh, God, I hope at least Rick Stansbury comes back. Like, that's what the fan base was saying, right? Because he looked like the bit of stability. But secondly, because there have been rumors all season long that Penny that they weren't getting along, and that he was out of here. Right? That's, you know, I'm sure the same rumors. So why did he have to come out and make a statement? That's not what assistant coaches do. Like, you don't get how many Memphis football assistants last year came out and said, I'm staying.
Zero.
They didn't. They just stayed. You don't have to come out and make a public statement that I'm staying. You just don't leave if you're an assistant. Right. That's how it works. And so why did he have to make the statement? Because we knew, or at least had heard whispers, that he and Penny were at odds. And so is it really that surprising that they papered it over as best they could, but then here you look up in September and they're still at odds? I think that's the most obvious logical explanation for what happened to Rick Stansbury. They didn't like each other. Then he didn't want him around. Honestly, I don't think it's NCAA, and I don't think it's just, I'm just looking, connecting the dots. I don't think it's the NCAA. I don't think it's anything. I think it's Penny didn't want Rick Stansbury around.
Yeah, then the other three.
Isn't that what you fundamentally think? Yeah.
Sure, with Rick. But the other three, they're supposed to be good friends that go back a long time. You know, like that's where Jeff, I don't think it's any one particular thing. I think it is a mash of every bit of dysfunction leading to the ouster of four separate coaches. I don't know. I mean, obviously there's a reason for each particular coach maybe, but I do think that this is just an overwhelming amount of dysfunction going on behind the scenes, and these guys were let go for a lot of different reasons.
I think that one is more likely. Those guys are more likely budget/yes men/let's improve the staff/
yes,
you know, that kind of thing.
Sure.
I think is true. But what's stunning about those guys is that Penny had, if you look at the staff who's not the critical assistants, he'd already made extensive changes in his staff.
Yep.
Right? He'd already done that. He'd already taken Faragi and turned him from an assistant into an advisor. Like, that had already been done. And then all of a sudden, he's like, nah, not an advisor, now you're out. And that reminds me of nothing as so much as the way he handles his rotation. You know, like, it's the same way. It's like, one day you're starting at point guard, and the next day you don't get off the bench. You know, and I really think, like, this is just management 101, whether it's in assistants, and it's easy for me to say, I don't pretend I could coach a basketball team, and so if I sound like that, I don't mean that. But it seems to me that if you're running an organization, your job is to identify talent. I think Penny has done that, both coaching talent and playing talent. And then your second job is to put them in defined roles where you empower them to do their jobs. You identify the role that is best for them. You put them in those roles. You're clear with them, so everyone understands their roles. And then within those roles, they're empowered to do their jobs. And it seems to me that if you're looking at Penny, his rotation, the way he handles players, or the way he handles his staff and assistants, I don't think he's ever done any of those things. He doesn't identify particularly roles. He lets people hang out there. They don't really understand what the hell's going on. They go all summer not knowing if they're going to be back or not. Then they think they're going to be back, and then all of a sudden they're not back.
Yeah.
Like, and that's not that different from the way he handles starting lineup.
Yeah.
And some of that might be because he wants to be nice to everybody, and, you know, he has a hard time giving people bad news. But what it comes down to is being an effective manager of people. It's the same things that make someone a good manager at International Paper or at FedEx or at a restaurant. You have to be able to manage people, and it doesn't feel like. And even if you look at the NCAA stuff, really, that's sort of what ultimately happened here is that he's got. He's got someone who's pretty clearly, you know, bitter at him because he was, you know, whatever. I mean, that's where this is coming from. And then the other trend in all of this is the sloppiness. The sloppiness of way back at East, he said, I never read the rule book. And so the weird thing is, of course, is even these NCAA potential allegations, which we're talking about as if they're very serious, and they are, they involve $40,000, $60,000 in a world where players make $3
million. Yep.
You know? And so it's kind of horse twaddle. You know, like, really? We're going to... But there are rules. And the rules are you can't pay players yourself. The rules are it has to be the collective or it has to be NIL. And it doesn't feel like he's ever much cared for rules.
That's the thing that I get from... I've gotten from a lot of fans... of that basketball program over the past 24 hours is the thing that makes it even more frustrating, all these issues that they're going through, is they're just so easily avoidable. A lot of these things are just so easily avoidable. And that's that. I understand why people are angry with that part of it.
Yes, it feels like if you just pay attention to the details, dot the I's, cross the T's, You didn't have to be dealing with this. Like someone said, someone called into my show and said, it feels like everyone's picking on Memphis again. No one's picking. Memphis did it to itself.
Don't be an easy target then. You know what I mean? Well, like that's the issue.
The letter came from Memphis. It wasn't some outside force picking on Memphis. It was, you know, it wasn't, the letter
the
came.
The call's coming from inside the house.
Yeah, exactly. The calls are coming from inside the house. So that's who's picking on Memphis. Memphians, disaffected people within his program or who had been affiliated with his program, that's who's picking on Memphis. Memphians are picking on Memphis because they don't like the way it's been handled.
Yep. Now, the final thing I this is sort of obvious to me, and I've heard you, I think you've discussed it as well, the Ed Scott thing. Having been here for, you know, his job starting 6 or 7 weeks ago and then this happening now, I don't think there's any coincidence with that. And it really goes back to me. Like, you look at the situation Laird Veach took over in 2019. Like, Penny was the cash cow. Penny had a number one recruiting class. Penny got the, you know, a season ticket sales to an absolute high. He had everybody excited. Now Ed Scott comes in and he looks at it and he says, yeah, you were not in the same situation. And I don't necessarily have a tie to you. We definitely have to get this thing figured out. There's just a ridiculous amount of dysfunction that we have to handle step by step, or this is not going to turn out the way you want it to turn out.
Well, and among other things, if you're Ed Scott and you really believe that your job is to get Memphis into a Power Four conference, you do have to clean up the nonsense. You know, like, part of the reason, we look for all the reasons why Memphis has been left out and how it's been unfair that Memphis has been left out.
One thing we don't necessarily mention.
Is that Memphis is, you know, has a reputation for being a dirty program, you know, or a poorly run program or whatever else. Yeah, and so I think you have to cut out, particularly, like, there was another story in the Daily Memphian today about the research grants and how this is literally the first year that they brought in more than $100 million academically in academic funding. There's so many things that are going well there at the university that you hate to have this kind of stuff, besmirching the name. I do think that if you think about, like, I thought Jeff Crane was a lovely man, and a lot of people within the athletic department wanted him to get the job as the AD, because they knew him, they knew that he was a good worker, continuity, all of that, right? I do think, and again, we'll see if Ed Scott turns out to be effective or not, I do think having a fresh voice and a fresh approach to handling this I can't imagine how Jeff Crane would have been handling this, right? If Laird Veach couldn't stand up to Penny Hardaway, and he couldn't, right? He couldn't, you know, they didn't speak, for heaven's sakes.
Right.
I think Ed Scott, he comes in here, he's confident of his approach. If you've listened to him at all, and he's supposed to be on my show tomorrow morning at 9:35, if people want to hear him for yourself.
I'll be tuning in.
He has a confidence about him, and I think he thinks he knows how to run a program. And I think the fact that he has a fresh voice and a fresh approach is probably good. Because it'll either result in two things. It'll either result in a more effective Penny Hardaway, a more effective, you know, hopefully the wins without the nonsense, or it will result in a new coach. And either of those, we would all hope for the first, that they can just eliminate the nonsense and figure it out and move forward and, you know, have the next 7 years be better than the last Or if not, then they will ultimately be a change, which I think would at that point be in order.
Yep, I hear you. Well, Jeff, I appreciate it, man. We'll talk again next week.
See ya.
Yes, sir. That's Jeff Calkins, at Jeff_Calkins on X, columnist for the Daily Memphian, also host of the Jeff Calkins Show 9 to 11 right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. I thought he broke it down really well. I mean, it's just, it is a bad situation. The University of Memphis athletic department, certainly the basketball program is in right now, and it's something that has to be fixed before it's too late for Penny Hardaway. Now, let's go ahead and grab a break on that note. When we come back, we're going to get to a trip around the NFL, and I'm actually going to make some picks today. We'll talk AFC winner, NFC winner, Super Bowl winner, and I'll pick an MVP. That's on the other side, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now back to the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Back into the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. It's time to take a trip around the National Football League. We have a couple of stories, then we'll get to picks. Let's hit those stories.
The Denver Broncos.
Bo Nix was actually named the Broncos captain, one of their captains. And Bo Nix becomes the first Broncos rookie to become a captain since Hall of Famer Floyd Little earned the honor in 1967. And I kind of understand it. He's a guy who clearly has taken that locker room by storm. He's a guy who clearly has a feel for the offense. He gets the ball out. They feel comfortable with him at quarterback. He seems to be leading by example even in his rookie year. Shouldn't be that much of a surprise. He's 24 years old. He played in college for 5 years. But at the same time, I expect decent things from him this year. I just don't think he's on a good enough team to make that much noise. But I think the Broncos right now over under 4.5. I think I'm leaning over right now. I think I'm leaning over because of Bo Nix and what I think he will do in his rookie season.
The Tennessee Titans.
DeAndre Hopkins is back at Titans practice. He did that yesterday. He had an MCL injury that had limited him since July. Now, you have Calvin Ridley, DeAndre Hopkins. And, on paper, you look at that, and you're like, damn, I kind of like what the Titans have. Will Levis can definitely show out to a certain extent. Those are guys that can definitely eat up some targets. But I saw this stat yesterday, and I want you to remember this number, 2.3. 2.3 is the number. That's the average yards of separation that DeAndre Hopkins and Calvin Ridley had combined in 2023. And obviously, Calvin Ridley with the Jags and DeAndre Hopkins with the Titans. Now, I know that they're not known as separators. They're decent route runners, but they're really good contested catch guys. But that's one of the lowest averages among wide receivers in the National Football League. Now, I think Sunday is going to be a real struggle for them. You have to deal with Jalen Johnson, who's an All-Pro, Kevin Byard, former All-Pro, Jaquan Brisker, who's a really good player going into year three or four in that Bears secondary. I think it's going to be really tough for them to take advantage of week one. But that is a number that you have to pay attention to all year. Will Levis probably needs a little bit more space than that to fit it into some windows. That's a tight window you have to throw to when you only have 2 yards of separation from your main wide receivers.
All right, Gabe. Before the first game, it is prediction time.
I need
your AFC winner.
My AFC winner? Who the hell else can I go with? I'm going with the damn Chiefs. What do you want me to do? Here's two things I know. Here's two things I know about the Chiefs. One, they will be in the playoffs. There's just no doubt in my mind they're going to be in the playoffs. And two, they have Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, and Andy Reid. They don't lose in the playoffs. Like, what do you want me to do? What do you want me to do? They're going against some guys who don't perform against them well in the postseason. Josh Allen may be there. He's never beat them really in the postseason. Look at Lamar Jackson and the Ravens. Never been good in the postseason. Your best hope is Joe Burrow, but they're in the AFC North. How are they going to manage that? They're alongside the Ravens. I just think when you look at the Chiefs, I think they're on their way for a three-peat, but I'll get to that in a second.
All right. I need your NFC winner, but can I guess?
Yeah.
Can I guess?
Go ahead.
It's got to be the Lions,
right? Of course
right?
It's the Lions, baby.
Let's go.
Best
Let's
offensive
go.
Line in the NFL. A quarterback who is way too underrated. I think he's probably a top 10 to 12 guy that never gets that type of respect in Jared Goff. He's very good at keeping the offense on schedule. They still have the two-headed monster of David Montgomery, Jahmyr Gibbs going into year two. Defensively, you have Aiden Hutchinson going on year three at 11.5 sacks last year. I've seen some people pick him as a potential defensive player of the year this year. You added Marcus Davenport as one of your DNs. I think that's going to help you. He's really good against the run. DJ Reader, one of the best run defenders on the interior of a defensive line in the NFL. That's a guy who's off the physically unable to perform list. He's going to play. They have strengthened the secondary so massively. Carlton Davis, great veteran cornerback from coming over from Tampa Bay. Brian Branch, who was unbelievable in his rookie year at the safety position. Tarion Arnold, you drafted out of Alabama. I think everything about this team screams to me that they're going to be winning the NFC and they're the best team in the NFC. And here's the other part of it. They have a lot of second-year guys who already have the scar tissue from last year. They were up 24-7 in the NFC Championship, ended up letting the 49ers creep back in and win that game. But think about all of the guys going into year two that absolutely can understand what's expected of them in a playoff situation. You have Sam Laporta, one of the best young tight ends in the game. You have Jack Campbell, Mike linebacker, who I think is going to be phenomenal in year two. You have Brian Branch, who was one of the best strong safeties in the league last year, even as a rookie. You just have a lot of guys that are young, that have already gotten and taken those lumps in the postseason. I love this Lions team. I'm going to continue to stand by them as the season goes along. Just hope they don't have any big injuries. That's what that goes for any NFL team, though.
So who wins the Super Bowl?
Chiefs. Chiefs three-peat. They have too many playoff performers, and that goes for the coaches as well. Andy Reid has become a really good playoff coach. I don't know why I'm losing the name. Spags is D.C., one of the best playoff performing defensive coordinators in the history of the game. And then you have Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, Chris Jones. I mean, they're too damn good. And they're too damn clutch. And I got to be honest with you, if we're talking about postseason games, if you bet against the Chiefs, you're going to lose. It's become the old Patriots way. When Tom Brady was in a Super Bowl or Tom Brady was in a playoff game, if you bet against him, you're an idiot. I'm not going to get caught with my pants down. I'm going with the Chiefs.
Who should the people put money on for MVP?
All right. I like this one. Now, there's a lot of ways you can go this year. If you are a believer that Aaron Rodgers at age 40 is going to really make some things happen, he could win comeback player of the year, no doubt. But if you think that he can really light it up and get that Jets team to a winner and potentially win the AFC East, I think it would be smart money to throw it on him. Patrick Mahomes, always a good pick. Lamar Jackson, I don't know about that one. He won it last year, and I think people, you know, just like we do in the NBA, we get a little tired with voting the exact same guys MVP. But you want to know what I'm going with? It's not off the board by any stretch of the imagination, but it's one that I think people have discounted over the years. I'm going with Josh Allen, and I don't think the Bills are going to be as good a team as they have been, but I think they will be a playoff team. Because Josh Allen is that good. And the reason I say this, Lamar Jackson has won two MVPs for reasons that we can sort of assume, or he has to do everything for that offense. He ran for 1,000 yards. He threw for 3,500, accounted for a bunch of touchdowns. That's why he has won two MVPs in the past 5 years. You don't know what Josh Allen's going to have to do this year? Want to know what he's going to have to do for that Bills offense? Everything. It may lead to some turnovers, but we know with Josh Allen, he's an explosive playmaker. He's got a really good arm. He can be accurate at times. I think he's going to try to limit those turnovers with all of the talk about him the past few years with how many he has. I think Josh Allen at plus 800 is the best bet you could have as your NFL MVP. What do you think?
I don't think it's a bad one. I don't think it's a bad one. I would probably pick Mahomes because it just feels like...
he's plus 450.
It feels like... coming off of the Super Bowl win, everybody's just kind of refocused on how good of a football player he is. And I think that there have been some discussions about how he should probably have more MVPs. So I just think
he's got two. He's cool.
But if the Chiefs have the season that we think that they're going to have, I think that Mahomes will get it.
Okay. Well, Josh Allen, I think it's his time. And I think that team has a little bit of a winning DNA that will get them to the playoffs.
I don't think it's a bad bet.
It's a regular season award. And I think that guy right there is just going to have to do so much. He might run your 700 yards, throw for 4,000.
Where the Dak
in that type of situation, I think you have to lean Josh.
What are
Allen.
The Dak Prescott odds?
Oh, Dak Prescott odds—they're a little farther down. He's not in the top six, I don't believe.
Oh wow, that's actually kind of surprising.
He's not in the top. Well, Jordan Love took over him. Jalen Hurts.
Oh, that's right.
CJ Stroud, Burrow.
I bet CJ and Jordan Love are getting a ton of people.
Oh, I would imagine. I would imagine. Who more do you think? CJ Stroud probably. Because of all the things he has around him. He's
going to
put up big passing stats this year.
Just, I feel like NFL media has been so behind the Packers and Jordan Love that it just may have been in front of people enough to where they bet it.
Okay. Well, we'll see how it all plays out. But Josh Allen is going to be my pick for MVP heading into the season, which starts tonight. and it will be Ravens on the road as 3-point dogs against the Kansas City Chiefs. Let's go ahead and grab a break, and we'll come back into Small Talk.
Here on 92.9, we talk ball every weekday from 4 till 7 p.m. Except right now, it's time for Big Man Small Talk on 92.9's Gabe Kuhn Show.
And Small Talk is brought to you by Conway Services, reputable service available 7 days a week. Now, I'm not necessarily a hater, and I'm not necessarily petty, but I do appreciate sometimes a little bit of hater in people and a little bit of pettiness shown by people. But there's the Battle of Kentucky going on this week. And no, it has nothing to do with the Wildcats. It has to do with Eastern Kentucky and Western Kentucky. They're going to be playing in Bowling Green at Western Kentucky's home field coming up at 6 o'clock on Saturday. It'll be on ESPN+. But Western Kentucky, after getting their brains beat in by Alabama, wanted to get the fans involved and wanted to have a little bit going on at their home stadium, which I've been to. Really cool little home crowd. I enjoyed, in high school when I visited Western Kentucky, that was actually my first offer, believe it or not. A little bit of Gabe Kuhn trivia knowledge there for you. But Eastern Kentucky is not allowing Western Kentucky to do something that just puts them in hater category. Western Kentucky, again, after getting their brains beat in by Alabama, wants to do a whiteout at home. And they're doing their annual whiteout game against Eastern Kentucky. Eastern Kentucky was asked very nicely after getting paid $325,000 to go play Western Kentucky in Bowling Green, not that far of a trip for them. They were asked very nicely to not wear white jerseys. They have declined altogether, and Western Kentucky put out a statement yesterday. We announced our football game themes and promotions for the 2024 season on July 10th with Saturday's home opener theme, a whiteout. Every season, we wear white helmets, uniforms, and pants for our annual whiteout game. However, Eastern Kentucky informed us on Tuesday of this week that they would not be exercising their right as a visiting team to wear their alternate uniforms. They will wear white uniforms, thus forcing us to wear red jerseys on Saturday. Per NCAA rules, both teams must agree to a uniform switch. We were hoping EK...
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
You would agree to allow us to wear white on Saturday as many other opponents have in past years. We still encourage our fans to show up, be loud, and wear white. This is top-tier hater pettiness. I love it. I absolutely love it. They're going in to try to win the game. They're saying, screw you, Western Kentucky. We are not going to bend the knee to you. We're ready to go kick your ass on the field.
If you're planning to do a whiteout, you should probably have the other school agree to it
before you
put it on the schedule.
Yeah,
I'm just going to put it there.
I would say so.
I'm also a bit surprised that the home team doesn't have precedent. Like the home, I feel like the home team should be able to be like, no, y'all are going to wear the alternate.
I would think the
we're
team
wear the white.
That is executing the bye game, in other words, paying the
Correct.
Other team to come in,
right.
should have something in the contract saying, especially if it's going to be a whiteout, hey, you're not going to wear white.
Yeah.
We're wearing white. This is kind of embarrassing. Very embarrassing.
Oh, it's very embarrassing.
Like,
it's super petty.
Penn State does the whiteout every year. Does like another team just decide to like not wear white that day?
I guess so.
I guess that's how that works. But this is top tier pettiness, man. I think we should all strive to be this petty at least once in our life. Good Lord. Eastern Kentucky. It's going to be the Colonels versus the Hilltoppers. And convince me to this day. Have you ever seen, and you probably haven't. Like no one pays attention to these things except sickos like me. Have you seen the Colonel mascot for Eastern Kentucky by chance?
No.
You can't convince me that's not Colonel Sanders. It is 100% Colonel Sanders. They have made their Colonel mascot Colonel Sanders.
Well, did you see their tweet yesterday? As soon as Western Kentucky put out their statement, they tweeted out from their football account, look at the uniforms they're wearing on Saturday.
I love it. A bunch of what? Say it.
Just a bunch of D's, man. Yeah. That's just like, that's tough.
Yeah.
That's petty.
But it adds a little bit of, maybe Western Kentucky.
Is there that much bad blood?
Maybe Eastern versus Western. Come on now. I don't know. It shouldn't be that much bad blood. You're getting a bye game. They lined your pockets with $325,000. I figure the least you could do is maybe wear a different jersey. It's not going to affect you. You're just trying to affect them and be petty. Which I kind of applaud. I'm not gonna be mad at somebody for, not bending the knee to someone that they want to go beat on the field. But that, they've set the tone, right? Is that a fair way of putting it? They have set the tone for that game. I don't know, though.
Are they any good? Like, is Western Kentucky, are they going to be able to run up the score
Western
on them?
Western Kentucky is, I mean, they played Alabama. It's hard to tell.
No, I'm talking about Eastern Kentucky.
They're usually a good FCS program, or at least okay. I don't try to quiz me on Eastern Kentucky this year. I'm not familiar.
Who's their backup right guard?
I don't know.
Wow, you've really let the people down.
I have no earthly idea. But they will not be wearing anything but white jerseys because they want to tell Western Kentucky to F off, throwing the middle finger at them. Let's go ahead and grab a break, though. We'll come back for hour number three, and we'll get into some college football. Week one, we'll recap that, and we'll get into week two with Kyron Samuels next.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.